It says in the pasuk that Paro hikriv, and Paro was coming closer. Paro was getting near. You know, the Jews left Mitzrayim, they left Egypt, they're running away. They're running. Everything was like it's going okay. Then there was a slight problem. They had a slight problem. Everything was going okay until they came to the Yam Suf, they came to the water, to the ocean, the Red Sea. And v'inei Mitzrayim nosea achareihem. And the Egyptians are chasing after the Jews. Vayiru mod, it says that the Jewish people were very frightened. Vayitzaku b'nei Yisrael l'Hashem. And the Jews called out, they screamed out to Hashem. Vayitzaku b'nei Yisrael l'Hashem. In other words, everything seemed to be going fine. It was a very special time in their lives. They were leaving the shrine, they left Egypt, they had all the slavery, and Hashem took them out with all kinds of great miracles. And just when they thought their life was going to get easier, they see they're in trouble. They come to the water, they come to the Yam Suf, and there are a million crazy Egyptians chasing them on camels and horses, and there's no place to go. There's nowhere to go. So, where does a person go when he has no place to go? Where do you go to if you have no place to go? You daven. You begin to scream. So it says, Vayitzaku b'nei Yisrael l'Hashem. They began to daven. They began to scream. So Rashi says, on the word Vayitzaku, which means they scream, Rashi says, Tafsu umnut tavotam. They took up the umnut, means the profession of their ancestors. They took up the skill of their ancestors, which is what? What's the skill of the Jewish people? Davening, praying. They took up the skill of the Jewish people. That's why davening in Yiddish, right? Davening, I know that's probably not you. Maybe you started using that here in America, but davening is in Yiddish. But to daven means to pray in Yiddish. But the Sperm says it comes from the word da'avuhun, which means of the fathers. In Aramaic, da'avuhun, which means of the fathers. Da'avuhun is davening. So they began to daven. So Rashi says that they took up the skill of their ancestors. And what's the skill of the ancestors? Rashi says, by Avram Omer El Makom Asher Amad. It says by Avram that he davened. It says El Makom Asher Amad that he davened. By Yitzchak, it says by Yitzchak Lasuach Basadeh. That Yitzchak went out to the field to daven. You remember when the shidduch, when the match was found, was when Rivka was brought in. So it says by Yitzchak Lasuach Basadeh. Yitzchak went to the field to daven. And Yaakov, it says, Vayivgav Makom. And Yaakov also davened, as it says in the Torah, Vayivgav Makom, when he came to that place and he fell asleep and he had that dream. It says that he came and he davened the Arvit. Everybody knows that Avram set up the Shacharit, the morning prayers, and Yitzchak set up Mincha the afternoon, and Yaakov set up Arvit, the evening tefillah, right? Fine. This is Rashi. Rashi didn't make this up. Rashi got this in the Medrash Chazal from the Michilta. This is found in Chazal, found in the Medrash. So it's a funny thing. Why does it say over here that they took up the umnut, they took up the work, the skill, the profession of their fathers? Since why is davening called a skill or a profession? What does it mean umnut? Not only that, number one. Number two. Why does, when it says that the Jewish people, when they came to Yom Tov, they began to scream, they began to daven. So Rashi is saying that they began to daven like the forefathers davened. Don't we know that we know what davening means, and we know that the forefathers davened, and what's Rashi telling us here? What is this? That they scream? It says that they took up the same kind of screaming that their ancestors screamed. That their ancestors used to also daven, and the Jews davened just like their ancestors davened. In other words, the question is, what is Rashi telling us here? What do we need this for? We know that the Avot davened. We know that they used to pray. Remember 2 years ago at this time was the Persian Gulf War, you remember? The war was in full force. I remember that on Tu B'Shvat 2 years ago I was in Detroit, I had to go speak in Detroit, and it was mamish the time of the war, the worst time of the war was this time. When the Jewish people go through hard times like that, we felt that our enemies are trying to kill us. And you know the way that the missiles were being aimed at us. And the intent of our enemies was to destroy Yerushalayim, to kill Jews. We know at those times that there's no one to turn to accept Hashem. There's no one to turn to accept Hashem. Like it says in the Pasuk in Tehillim, Min ha'meitza karati ka, anani b'merchav ka. Min ha'meitza karati ka, when a person, and when the Jewish people are in the state of the Meitzah, we're stuck. stuck. We have no place to go. What are you going to do? In Eretz Yisrael, they're like sitting ducks, right? So in Hametz HaKaratika, we began to call. There's no one else who can help you. If God forbid you go to the doctor. Somebody's not well, they go to the doctor, and they go to this specialist, that specialist, the third specialist, and they all tell him the same thing, bad news. So he's saying, in Hametz HaKaratika, Ana Hashem Oshi, Ana Hashem Aslihana. There's no one else to turn to. And when a person has that feeling, and here comes the koach to daven, the power to daven, when a person has a feeling that I have nowhere to go, I have no one to whom I can turn. I'm stuck. I'm in a place where I'm stuck. So when Hamesa means that from a narrow place, from a place where I have nowhere else to turn, Karatika, I call Hashem. So during the time that was all happening, by the war, and it came, it was this parasha. So during that time I was thinking, really, really, what's the difference between sitting in Tel Aviv with the Iraqi Scud missiles aimed at you and walking down the street in New York? Really, what's the difference? It's mom, it's no difference at all. I'm always amazed when parents, you know, we beg the parents, please, please, let your child go to Israel. Let your child go to study in Shiloh. No, it's dangerous in Israel. You know, the Chavos Chaim say that every bullet has an address on it. You know, you can go under the table, you got it. If it's meant for you, it'll find you under the table. If you think about it, really, really, what's the difference? Is it any less dangerous? I remember a few years ago there was a man walking in Williamsburg with his children and a flower pot fell from on top and killed his little boy, a chassidish boy. Fell on the boy's head. Father's holding his hand. And it falls on the child's head and killed him. Not in Israel, not by Iraq, not in the Persian Gulf. In Williamsburg. On the street in Williamsburg. Every one of us knows a story. Hashem Yirachem. We all know stories. We know stories. A person is healthy as well as walking on the street. Bikitsu in short. There really is no difference between a person who's standing in a terribly frightening and dangerous situation and a person who's standing in a peaceful place. Everything is fine. There's no difference if you believe, if you know, that every moment of your life is a gift from Hashem, and if Hashem wants you to live, you live, and Hashem doesn't want you, you won't. I mean, it's all the same. It's really, really all the same. Even though there are special halachas that a person shouldn't on purpose go walking to a dangerous place, if it's all the same, so listen, I'm going to put on my yarmulke and take a walk to Harlem tonight. No, because they're halachas. But in truth, it's the same danger. In truth, it is. They're halachas that we're not supposed to try, that a person, you know, like it says, a person, for instance, says a person before Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur shouldn't walk next to a wall that looks like it's crumbling. Because you don't have this schuyot, you know, you're walking past a place, and it's a dangerous place, so you have to have this big schut that everything should be well. But the truth of the matter is that a person's destiny is not any different whether he's standing in one place or standing in a different place. Always. Just let me first develop a little bit of enemies. Always, there's no one to depend upon Hashem. But Hashem. That's it. The only one you can depend upon is Hashem. Why? Because as long as the doctor tells you it's okay. You know how many times doctors kill people?
More than anybody.
More than doctors that save people, maybe. Doctors kill people. And then they cover up, you know, nobody knows. So, a person goes to the doctor and says, oh, Mr. So-and-so, you're going to be fine, I think this is still, everything is fine. And who determined that you're fine, and who made it that the pill should work, and who arranged your life in such a way? It's like Hashem. Hashem is the same thing. When a person is being told by five doctors, a kid, nothing in the world can save you, for the same Hashem who can save you when you have a headache and a cold, and made the medicine that cures an ulcer, or whatever it is, the same, you know, a shot for diabetes. The same God can take away cancer, you understand? I mean, it's the same thing. What do you mean, it's hard for Hashem to schluck away cancer than to schluck away a cold? Well, Hashem, what do you mean? It's harder for him? He has to craft, he has to sweat to pull away cancer. It's the same thing. It's the exact same effort involved. So really, it's always the same. Some show is. In other words, a person really, if he looks at life correctly, he'll understand that every minute of your life is really a meitzar. You really can always in a situation where there's no one there that can help you accept Hashem. You don't think of it, because everything, no, there's nothing that happens when I walk on this street. I walk down Ulster Street 1,000 times. And I made this turn on, what is it, 71st or something? I made this turn, nothing happened to me. But you know how it is, every 5 years there'll be one person who'll walk down that street and get run over by a car. Right? She said, okay, you know, statistics. Statistics. It's always this amazing about statistics. People go and buy lottery tickets. I'm sure some of you once in a while will buy a lottery ticket, right? If you look on the back of the lottery ticket, it'll tell you what your chances are of winning. The chances of you winning the lottery are much, much less than getting run over by a car and killed in New York City. In other words, you stand a greater chance of getting killed by a car in New York City, but people never think they'll get killed by a car, but they always think they'll win the lottery ticket, or else they wouldn't buy one. It's an interesting thing, no?
Because they're more optimistic.
You're more optimistic. But the truth is, statistically, there's more of a likelihood you get run over. But if you have a person who that lives in this world thinking, I can't walk in the streets because it's dangerous, I'm going to get run over, because there's a greater chance of getting run over, than you're going to be sugar. You lose your mind if you think like that. You can't live. So how do we live? We live like cheerful fools. You know, we walk down the street and everything is fine. But something happens, God forbid. The truth of the matter is that if a person thinks deeply, every moment of life is a Messiah. Every moment of life, we're in a certain situation where Hashem can take you, Hashem God forbid can't take you. We don't think that way. That's because we play around statistics. Statistics are silly. Statistics mean nothing at all. The same way that if someone gives you a bottle of pills and tell you, there are 25 pills in here, only two of them can kill you, the rest are good for you. You wouldn't say, well, statistics are on my side. You wouldn't say, I guess you're crazy. You just leave, you put it right. I'm not touching anything. I'd rather die on my own. I don't need to take a pill. These things don't mean anything. They mean nothing. Sorry, they mean nothing. Look, Baruch Hashem, I have 5 daughters and 1 boy. Each time that my wife, 5 girls and a boy. Each time my wife is going into the delivery room, I figure, must be a boy this time, no? Each time must be a boy. I mean, every time it's a girl. So one time it's a boy, my wife always laughs. Each time, you know, it's a 50% chance that Hashem will give you this. But you think, no, the statistics, of course, it's crazy. Where does it say statistics? I should have such a thing? It's supposed to be like this, you know, 50-50.
What number is that boy?
Huh? The boy was, fourth. The boy was the fourth. Yeah, same. The boy is the fourth. Awesome. So we have to save money. The two of us have to save plenty of money, huh? We have to save a lot of money for the girls, for the weddings. So no, a person thinks, well, statistics are not just silliness. It's stupidity. It means nothing. It means nothing. It doesn't mean anything. I think we already understand this. There's a big disagreement. There's a famous disagreement between the Rambam and the Ramban. Don't mix up these two names. The two of the greatest Rishonim, as you've all heard, the Rambam, Rabbeinu Moshe ben Maimon, right? Maimonides and the Ramban. Rabbeinu Moshe ben Nachman. There's a disagreement between them about whether or not tefillah, davening, is a mitzvah from the Torah or not. In other words, we all daven, of course, you have to. But the question is that from the Torah or is that from the Chachamim? Is a person commanded by the Torah to daven? The Rambam says, yes, you're commanded by the Torah to daven every day. What to daven? The Torah doesn't tell you how much, what. That's a step. That's from the Chachamim. But if you have to daven every day, the Rambam says, yes, you have to daven. And it's your post, like, Vavatam Hashem, okay, you have to serve Hashem, and the Gemara Tanit says that means, Ezuhi Avodah Shabalev Zutzfilah, means to daven, to pray. The Ramban says, no. That pasuk that says that you should serve Hashem doesn't talk about davening. It says to serve Hashem, you should do the mitzvah with all your heart. It doesn't say anything about davening. Davening is from the Chachamim. There's only one exception, Ramban says. One exception is that Be'et Tzara, what do you mean Be'et Tzara? At a time of, God forbid, a terrible, terrible problem, like our enemies are aiming their missiles at us, right? Then the Ramban says, you know, they used to blow on the trumpets, the Chatzrot, and they used to call out and scream, then Tzvila is from the Torah. But all the other Tzvilot that we daven is from the Chachamim. Does everybody understand this disagreement? Again, the Rambam holds that tefillah is from the Torah, it's a mitzvah from the Torah, you're obligated to daven from the Torah, every day. The Rambam says no. The only time the Torah says you have to daven is when? Is what? Is when it's a specific time of unique danger. What that is, okay, that's not for now, but it's a time of danger when your enemies are rising against you. So my Rebbe said that really, really, there's no disagreement, they're not arguing. They're really not arguing. The difference is that the Rambam holds that every moment of your life is a time of danger. You understand? That life itself is the danger. What do you mean? The Ramban says that when the missiles are aimed at you, then that's a time of danger. And there's a special chiyuv, there's a special responsibility to pray, to daven. The Rambam is telling you that there's a mitzvah to pray every day because you understand deeply, look into your life and understand what's going on. You realize that just to walk and to breathe and to live is amazing. I remember so clearly there was a man that lived on my block now, but he's not in this world anymore. He's 44 years old. And we were together once, some of the men from the block, we were davening, that was on Shabbos, a mincha or something. And we heard that in our town in Far Rockaway, there was a man that came down with terrible cancer. And I remember so clearly how this man, and myself and a few other men, we were talking, like, very, very young man with children. And this man, this 44-year-old, this other man was saying, oh, what a terrible, terrible story. 2 months later, that man that I was talking to himself was diagnosed as having cancer. He lived 6 months, he's dead. No, I can't get out of my head. That, you know, you're standing there talking to somebody, all of us are the same. And he's saying, you know, all of us are saying, oh, look at that other man in town, how he had cancer, what if he has cancer, what a terrible thing. And this other man is saying, look what's going on, young people, terrible, terrible, terrible. And then he himself, as he spoke, maybe 7 months after he's saying those words, he's already, Lorelei, we should know if he was already not in this world, was under the ground. I mean, this life is a meitzar. I mean, the world itself is a meitzar. It's a meitzar karatika. It's all hard. It's all day. We live in such a way. Because every moment of your life, you're depending on Hashem. That's all there is. So what's this business with Abraham, Yitzhak, and Yaakov? That it says that when he came to Yamsuf, he came to the Red Sea, we took up the work of our forefathers. We use this. We use the skill of our forefathers to daven. What does that mean? The skill of the forefathers. When you look at the tefillot of Avraham, Yitzhak, and Yaakov in the Torah, and the place from which we learn out each of those tefillot, you'll see an interesting thing. None of those tefillot were said at a time of any particular problem. Avraham, when he got up to daven shacharit, when it says by Avraham Avinu, when he went to daven shacharit, so it's over there. There wasn't any kind of a particular problem in his life. And by Yitzchak, it says that Yitzchak was davening in the field. It wasn't any particular problem. He was davening. It says that Rivka came, and he happened that Yitzchak was saying Mincha. And when Yaakov came there to Arvid, alright, he was going through a hard time because he was running away from his brother, right? He's got a makom, but it wasn't any kind of tragedy or calamity. You know, he was rested. He went to sleep. It wasn't any kind of calamity. His brother really wasn't chasing him anymore at that time. It wasn't a calamity. It wasn't a big problem. And Chazal was saying, by Kriyat Yam Suf, when we stood by the waters of the Red Sea, with our enemies behind us, and the ocean in front of us, and no place to turn, no place to go, Chazal tell us, Rashi brings here, that by Yitzaku b'nei Yisrael al Hashem, that the Jews called out to Hashem, they dive in the way the Avot dive. So I was wondering, what's Rashi telling us? What does it mean that they dive in the way that the Avot dive? No, they didn't! when you're standing in an ocean, and you have a million crazy Arabs chasing you after you with their swords, and you have no place to run, you're going to tell me that you can daven the same way that Yitzhak davened standing on the field that day? You know that when any of us have ever, God forbid, been in any trouble, if there's been somebody in our family that was sick, you know how we daven. It's not the same way we daven on a regular day. On a regular day, you know, Shema Yisrael, it's like you take that shot, here, take and leave me alone. But when somebody's, God forbid, sick, or something is not well, you really pull your heart out. Because you feel it, hey, where am I going to go? I have nothing to do. I'm in such trouble. There's no one to help me. This person I love is being operated on. What's going to be? What's going to happen? He's so sick. She's so sick. What's going to be? And Rashi says that how did we daven when we stood by the Red Sea? That we took up the way of our forefathers, how they daven. It seems that there's no comparison at all, because the way that the forefathers daven was at a time of peace and everything was okay. So why is Rashi making this comparison? Is that the question? I mean, this is how we daven? No, we daven with our backs against the wall, with a gun held to our head. That's how we daven by the Yam Suf, by the water. But the Avot, they daven on a regular day. Look at a Tuesday, a Wednesday. It was a regular day. It wasn't anything special. So it seems that Chazal and Rashi, that Rashi is revealing to us a very, very deep thing about daven, about how we should pray. Let's take it to heart. No, really to work on it, to think about it. But Rashi is telling us that whenever the Avot daven, on a regular Tuesday morning, when Avram daven, on a regular Wednesday afternoon, when Yitzchak daven, on a regular Thursday night, when Yaakov daven, when they daven, when they pray to Hashem, they pray with the same feeling of enormous pressure, with the same feeling of being in a meitzar, in a dangerous world, with the same feeling of having no one in the world to whom to turn to, other than Hashem, the same way that we daven by the Yom Suf, that's how the Avot daven. Because the truth of the matter is, there is no difference between a regular Tuesday morning and standing by Yom Kippur, by the sea. There is no difference at all. Once you realize, you believe, that every single thing in your life comes from the master of the world, and whether or not you're going to survive this day, as opposed to other people who have not survived this day, who will not survive today, whether or not you're going to be able to take one step forward in your life, or God forbid, two steps backwards, every single moment of your life is the same. It's equal. You're equally in God's hands, this moment to that moment. when a person realizes that, that all of life is a meitzar, is like a dangerous, narrow strait, or is the Holy Rebbe of Nachman said, kol ha'olam kulo, what? Guess it's tzar mo, that the whole world is a narrow bridge. The whole world is a narrow bridge, v'yikal lo lefachet klal, the main thing is not to be afraid. The main thing is not to be afraid, because you have to understand that the same God who holds you up during a scud attack is holding you up when you're walking on the street. The same God. You're just as much in his hands. So when Rashi comes and tells us that when the Jewish people stood by the sea, they prayed the way that the Avot prayed, that tells us an amazing thing about how the Avot prayed. It tells us that when Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov prayed, and our forefathers, when our fathers and our mothers davened, when they prayed on a regular day, when things were perfectly fine and well, not when there was somebody that they loved in the hospital, not when there was some horrible danger and they were facing their enemies or the Red Sea, stop on a regular day. They davened with what feeling? Mehameit, Sakarati, I'm calling you, I have no, there's no one in the world that can help me. There's no one in the world that can help me. Not after the person has gone to 10 doctors in every single hospital in New York and they've all told them the bad news. But before you step foot into the first doctor, go, Mehameit, from a narrow strait. When you daven Hashem, just that your parents should be well, that your children should be well, that you should be well. It's always a meitzah. It's always the same. Rabbi Nachman used to say that when a Jew davens, he should try to imagine himself hanging by a thread over an ocean in midair and to scream out to God that he should pull you back in. It's a different way of davening, the way we daven on a regular Tuesday. You're hanging over a huge ocean. He says that there's a stormy ocean with tremendous waves, and you're being held by a thin thread way up above this ocean, and there's no one in the world that can pull you in except Hashem. That's how he says, that's how a Jew davens. He wasn't talking about Yom Kippur, he was talking about a regular day. He wasn't talking about when he's sitting by the Red Sea, he was talking about a regular day. That's how a Jew davens. So we say, in Tehillim it says, we say this prayer during a time of difficulty. Lama Sefer is the 20th chapter of Tehillim. The whole tefillah. Tehillim, that Hashem should help us in a time of difficulty. You say, Eilu v'rechev, no. These go by chariots, Eilu v'susim with horses, v'anachnu. V'shem Hashem naskir. We call out the name of Hashem. I told you, very simple, understand tefillah. Eilu v'rechev, Eilu v'susim. So when it's in a time of terrible problems, and the goyim have no one to rely upon except their chariots and their horses, their planes and their tanks and their boats, that's who they rely upon. V'anachnu v'shem Hashem naskir. We call out to Hashem. There is no teva, there's no nature by a Jewish person. It's not just that according to the rules of statistics or nature, this is supposed to be okay, it's not supposed to be okay. It's always v'anachnu v'shem Hashem naskir, that a person calls out to Hashem, that's all there is. So we learn out from the Avot, that in truth, there is no, for a Jewish person, there is no distinction, there is no difference at all. There's no difference at all between a peaceful, calm day of your life and a time of your life that is difficult and dangerous and frightening. There is really no difference between the two. There's really no difference whether it's this kind of a day or that kind of a day. In both situations, all we have is anachnu v'shem Hashem naskir. That's all there is. And this itself is the mystery of davening. From here, a person can begin to daven. Because what tefillah depends upon, that's why I want to give a basic introduction, understand this. What does tefillah depend upon? Tefillah depends upon a recognition and a feeling that without Hashem I can't survive, I can't manage. You say in Shemoneh Esrei, you begin by saying Hashem is great and awesome and powerful and all these things, right? And all that stuff. And then afterwards you ask Hashem, please, I need a parnasah, I need health, I need this, I need that, right? You ask Hashem for all these things. Now why do you have to say the same thing every day? Every day again you're saying the same thing. You know how differently you would say it on a day that you didn't have health? God forbid. All of a sudden, the bracha that you went through so fast every day, it's like it stops in slow motion, you see Refa'inu Hashem and RFA. Why? The basis of tefillah, the basis of davening is the recognition that every single moment of your life you depend on Hashem. For Refuah, for Panasah, for all these things. And when you daven these things and you understand what you're saying, you realize that you're strengthening your faith. Every time you daven, you're strengthening your faith in the belief that whether the doctor says this, the doctor says that, whether my boss says this, or my boss says that, Refa'inu Hashem b'nei Rafa'i. If Hashem heals me, I'll be healed. Baruch atah Hashem, Baruch Hashem, if Hashem blesses this year, then I'll make a good parnasa. Makes no difference what the boss says or the doctor says. Makes no difference. It's the education of a Jewish person to realize, to recognize where everything comes from. And only a person who feels that he has nothing, if not for Hashem's help, only such a person knows what it really means to daven. The way that you and I have davened when it's been, God forbid, terrible times in our lives, we know what it means to daven. That's what Don Amel says, and we learned this in the Yeshiva, we're talking, remember, talking about Tfilah Lani, the prayer of the poor man? Don Amel calls himself the poor man. What does he mean the poor man? The afflicted man, the one who's suffering. Because no one knows how to daven like a poor person, like the afflicted person who's suffering, to daven, to turn your heart to Hashem and to ask Hashem for Yeshua, to ask Hashem to help you. Now we can understand an amazing medrash, a beautiful medrash. The medrash asks, why did Hashem do this? Why did Hashem take us out of Mitzrayim? Hashem took us out of Mitzrayim with all kinds of amazing miracles, makot and plagues. It was fantastic, special effects, unbelievable. It was the most fantastic thing that ever happened. Hashem took us out of Mitzrayim. So then he brings us to the Yam Suf, he brings us to the Red Sea, and everybody's so happy and confident. And they say, oh, look, the ocean, they say, I guess we'll have to go around. And then all of a sudden, you hear the rumbling of footsteps. And everybody is saying, no, it can't be. It can't be. And everybody's trying to say to themselves, no, I'm sure it's just some wind from the desert. And somebody says, no, I think we're in trouble. Right? And then everybody turns around, and they see a million of them coming on there. Right? They're coming after them. A million people. So the message is, why did Hashem take them out of Mitzrayim, do for them all these miracles and all these amazing things, only to bring them to the Yam Suf, and at Yam Suf, the whole business starts again. Why not do a clean job? What, Hashem couldn't finish them off? Why not finish it off? Why does Hashem allow this to happen? The Medrash asks it from you. The Medrash asks it from Reish Lakish, asks it in the Medrash. Shuman Levi, I don't know. Shuman Levi asks it in the Medrash. Why did Hashem do this to them? Why did Hashem do this? The Medrash says, why did Hashem do this? And it's a question we can always ask. Why does Hashem send our enemies against us? I mean, it's not just asking vengeance, it's all time. Lama asak, adosh baruch hu kach. Why does Hashem do this? So the Medrash answers, Shayam et avel et filatan. Hashem wanted them to die. And he gives a mashal from Yeshua ben Levi. What's the mashal? What's the story? The illustration, the parable is, of a king who is going, passing by, he's taking a walk, this king goes someplace, and he sees that there's a princess, a princess, and a wonderful princess, who is being attacked by a group of robbers, a group of muggers. So the Medrash says that the princess is screaming, please, Kvod Hamelach, please, your highness, please, your majesty, save me. And sure enough, the king goes and he rescues this princess, or the prince goes and rescues this princess. And he takes her back to the palace, and it's a beautiful story. They fall in love. And they set a date to get married, and everything is fantastic. It's beautiful. So the Medrash says, well, it was going very well. However, he says that the king saw that after a while, she wasn't interested in him. She seemed to have lost her interest. So what did the king do? We're not allowed to do such things ourselves. But it happens. The king went over to these guys. He knew who these muggers were. And he went over to these muggers and said, listen, fellas, don't ask me any questions, but I'm going to pay you some good money. This is what I want you to do. My intended, my fiancé, every day at 3 o'clock, whenever she takes a walk in the garden, in such and such place, she goes out to a deserted place of the garden. I want you guys to go. Remember how you went on your own after her? I want you guys to go. I'll pay you money. Go and scare her like you're going to, kidnap her and kill her. Give her a good scare. So it says that they went there. The Kevan Shabawa Leha Listin, Chila Tzoeket, when she saw that she was being pursued again by these murderers, so she began to scream, Melech, Melech! Your Majesty, my husband, my fiancé, whatever, my husband, she began to scream out. Amala Mela. So the king told her. The king came right there. He was watching. He came there. And he says, L'kach hayiti mitaveh l'shmo kolech. Ah, this is what I was waiting for to hear your voice. Kach Yisrael kishayu b'mitzrayim. So the Medrash says, same thing the Jewish people named Mitzrayim. Bayu m'shavdim b'hem. We were slaves. We were tortured by the Egyptians. Hitchilo tzoakim. They began to scream. The Talim and Ehem, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, they turned their eyes to Hashem and said, please Hashem, get us out of this tribe, get us out of this place, but help us, please get us out. The Kach Haya HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Livakesh, Lishmua, Kolam, Pam, Acheret, V'lo HaYurosim. Hashem wanted to hear their voices again, and they didn't want to call out anymore. Ma'asa, so what did Hashem do? Yirah L'Paro, L'Yadov HaKarem, Hashem sent Paro to chase after with a million of his soldiers, to chase after the Jews by the Yam, by the ocean. Shnemar Paro Hikriv, and Paro came near. And then was it say, Vayitzaku b'nei Yisrael Hashem, the Jews davened, they began to scream at Hashem. But at that time, Amar HaKadosh Baruch Hu, L'kach Hayiti B'vakeh L'Shmoh Kacham, this is why I said, I wanted to hear you screaming again. Shnemar, it says, Yonati B'chavi HaSela, it says in Shir Hashirim, that my precious dove is among the cracks of the rocks. Hashmini Kolech, let me hear your voice. Hashmini Kol Ein Omer El Hashmini Kolech. It doesn't say, let me hear your voice, but let me hear your old voice, the voice that I heard from you when you were in Egypt. That's the message. Let me explain. I mean, it sounds like a statistic, right? You see how our whole idea of davening is so mixed up, our whole idea of life is so crazy. Let's take a look at the story. So the story, you said, is very charming. Very charming, very disturbing. The king rescues the princess. She was screaming and he rescued her. There was a desperation. She screamed and he rescued her. Afterwards, they sort of settle into an engagement. They're engaged. I suppose she's busy. She's a princess. She's ordering the tablecloths for the wedding and she's worried about sending out invitations and who's going to take care of her hairdo and her makeup and, you know, all this stuff, right? In the meantime, the king sees that the princess no longer has the same desperate needs for him. She no longer has the same longing for him. In other words, he's sort of become a routine part of her life. So what does the king do? The king misses. The king doesn't miss. She loves him. It's not a problem. What do you mean? All of a sudden she stops loving. She loves him. It's not a problem. There's no problem with love over here. There's something that's missing in the passion and the need. So what does the king do? So he gets these guys. And he sends them against the princess to scare her. And then she starts to scream again. And he says, oh, this is the only reason I did that. I love you, and I'm so sorry I had to scare you. The only reason I did that was because I missed so much that sound of that voice, HaMelech, please, please, I need you. Where are you when I need you? I missed that. And that's why I did that to you. So the Medrash says, so to Hashem. Sometimes when Hashem misses our davening, we no longer speak to him, we no longer call to him, we no longer cry to him. So Hashem sends us, Hashem Yirachem, Hashem sends us difficulties in our lives. So we should stop. So we should turn to the screen. So we should feel once again the feeling of the Jews standing by the Red Sea. Then made sad that there's no place to go. There's no one to whom you can turn. There is nobody that's going to get you out of this mess except Hashem. There's no one that can do it. And Hashem puts people through this in their lives. And the mistake that we make is we normally think that when a person's in trouble, then you daven to try to get out of trouble. That's how everybody in the room, I'm sure, thought. So when you're in trouble, that's when you daven, you should get out. That's not true. I mean, we do that. But that's not how it works. The way it works is the reason that Hashem puts you into any kind of a trouble is that you should daven. Because the purpose of man's creation is to daven. Talk to Hashem. To get close to Hashem. To realize that you depend on Him every second. To get close to Him. So sometimes you say you believe in Hashem, you put on tefillin, you keep Shabbat, everything is nice. But you're missing the same, you're missing that fire, you're missing that love, you're missing that passion, that excitement. You're missing the need. You're missing the heart and the feeling that you depend on Hashem. So sometimes Hashem sends you some problems. So what? So the person should again know what it means, like to depend completely on Hashem, to rely upon Hashem, to call out, to scream at the yell to Hashem, they haven't done it so long, they begin to call to Hashem. That's the problem. I mean, that's the purpose of our existence. In other words, for instance, we think that the reason I have a piece of bread and I have to make a bracha on the bread. That's how we think. That's backwards. That's not true. The reason that you have bread is that you should make a bracha. That's how we normally think, oh, have bread. I have to make a bracha. That's not right. The reason Hashem gives you teeth is that you should make bracha. In short, Hashem is desperate for our conversation and our longing, so to speak. It's not that the world was created for the, everything that exists in your life, everything that's in the world is there so that you should open up more of a communication to Hashem. Sometimes you have a difficult time in your life, so you should daven. And that's the message of the night. And that's the Medrash means. So let's have to do Tu B'Shvat. Let's do the 15th day of Shvat. The Tu B'Shvat. The song, the Shabbat Shirat, Tu B'Shvat, what's this have to do with anything? There are two kinds of songs. There are two types of songs. Two reasons for a person. There are two kinds of songs. One kind of song, the one that we're most used to seeing in the Tanakh, is when something amazing happens, a miracle, some amazing, amazing, astounding thing happens. Wow, we're overwhelmed with Hashem's love for us and Hashem's presence. And we begin to sing. Like by Yom Suf, when Hashem split the ocean for us, we began to sing. Wow, your heart is overflowing and you begin to sing. That's one kind of soul. There's another kind of soul. And I'm not making this up. There's a song that's the song of nature. There's a Perek Shirah, there's a Perek in Chazal, there's a teaching from Chazal that says that every creature in the world has its own song. The birds have a song, the sun has a song, the moon has a song, the stars have a song, everything's a pasuk. The horses have a song, everything has a song. Did you ever hear horses sing? Did you ever hear the sun sing or the moon? No, they don't. So what does it mean when it says, except for Avi heard once, misread. Yeah? I don't recall him ever singing in the show, I only recall him speaking. We'll have to go over that a little bit. Take a look at the old reruns. So, what does it mean that a horse sings and the sun sings? What does that mean, it sings? There's a Gemara that says that one time that after David HaMelech finished writing the whole book of Tehillim, the greatest songs ever written, right? Tehillim, unbelievable. So he was feeling very good. He felt, you know, quite an accomplishment. So the Gemara says that a little bit he was feeling a little bit proud, a little bit more, you know, a little bit proud. Tzaddik shouldn't have taken so much credit. He took a little bit of credit. And at that moment, it says in the Gemara that a frog was hopping past David HaMelech, and the frog looked at David HaMelech and said to David HaMelech, "What are you so proud about?" David HaMelech said, "I'm proud because I just wrote the book of Tehillim. That's something to be proud of. 150 chapters of Tehillim." The frog said, "So big deal. When I go into the lake, there's a certain kind of a fish that swallows me up in order to live. My song is more beautiful than yours." And then the frog hops away. So like anything else, and I've been telling you since we're here together, if you look at the words of Chazal in a superficial way, then what you come up with is that King David is having a conversation with a frog. And if people have conversations with frogs, we take them away. So what does it mean that David is having a conversation with a frog? It's obvious what it means. What does it mean? What does the frog mean when the frog said that I have a more beautiful song than yours? What does it mean? Because I'm eaten by a certain fish, and that fish lives through me. What does that mean? What is the song of the frog? What does that mean? No? What does it mean? What's the song of the frog? The word in Hebrew for song is what? Shira. Shir. The song felt that comes the word shura. What's a shura? A line. The song of the frog is that it does what it's supposed to do. It does what it's supposed to do. That's its song. When something does what it's supposed to do, when something is doing what it's supposed to do, it's singing a song. It's not a song with a tune that we understand. It means that when nature's response to Hashem's will is called a song. When a person lives the way that he's supposed to live, the way that Hashem desired him to live, that's his song. And everybody has his song. And the frog has its song. And the horse has its song. By being a horse. That's not a free choice. Obviously, it's different than even being a free choice. Horse, that's what it is. The horse, of course. That's what it is. That's its song. That's its song. That's its shura. That's its shira, its song. By being what it's supposed to be. By doing what it's supposed to do. That's its song. So there are songs that are fantastic, spectacular songs, like when he crossed the Red Sea, and the whole world is shaking, the Jews are singing, and Miriam's taking out the tambourines, and the men are all singing, and the women are all singing. It's a certain kind of a song. When you see a nace, you see a miracle, you're overwhelmed. There are times in your life that you just feel like singing to Hashem when something good happens to you. But that's not the true test of what it means to be a Jew. The true test of being a Jew means, on a regular Tuesday morning, On a regular Tuesday night after work, when you sit down, you open up your scissors to say Arvi, to say a few Tehillim, are you still singing? That's what it means to be still. You still feel the desire and the need to live the way that Hashem wants you to live. Everybody can stand on the internet. Everybody, but on a Yom Kippur, everybody's scared and nervous and shaking. Wow, it's Yom Kippur and fasting and Hashem will look in, Hashem will look in. But how do you daven like on a winter morning? A person that's filled with faith knows that you have to faithfully carry out the will of God in every moment of your life. There's no different than Yom Kippur. Feel. That's Tu B'Shvat. Tu B'Shvat is a yontif that celebrates the new year of the trees. We spoke about that, I think, in a much more complicated way 2 weeks ago. What does it mean, Tu B'Shvat? What do we need a yontif for trees? That's not tonight. Tonight I said I want to be simple. Because that's the whole point of tonight, is to be simple. Tu B'Shvat is a yontif that celebrates the innate desire of the earth to comply with God's will. To live according to God's will. And Hashem tells every person, just as the earth lives with my will, and just as the earth follows its path, its line, its shura, and that is shira, that's its song, so too I ask of you to follow your line. To follow your shura, to sing your song. How? On a simple, regular day. To follow the will of Hashem. That's a song. It's not fancy. You don't get the Broadway with it. You don't sell records like that. That's the most beautiful song a person could sing. It's the most beautiful song that a person could sing. The song of being who you're supposed to be. Because what is a song? A song is when you take different notes, and you put it together, and it forms a harmony, right? And it makes a song. That's what a person's life is. There's a different thing in your life, and you put it together, and you follow Hashem's will, and you bring everything in your life together to serve Hashem. That's what a song is. That's what it means. Just like every song has ups and has its downs, like any song. That's what a song is. It has ups and has downs. Okay? There's good days and there's bad days. But no matter what, you follow the song. You follow the song, you live with the song. You don't go away from the song. You don't go away from the shura. You don't go away from your line. From what you're supposed to do. What you're supposed to do. What you're supposed to do. What you can do. That's a person's shira. That's a person's shura. And that's all that we have in this world. That's Tu B'Shvat. That's Shabbat Shira. That's the story of Kriyat Yam Suf. That's how Jewish people pray. That's what it means to sing to Hashem. I'm going to repeat a story that I told you a few months ago. But because it fits in very well here, and I want it to be connected to this Indian, so I'm going to repeat the story that I told you already a few months ago, so it's just a review. So I'm going to say it very fast, and I remember exactly when I told you. It was the story of when the Baal Tanya, when the old Rebbe, from the first Rebbe of Lubavitch, the Tnezal, when he came, when the Alter Rebbe came to Minsk. In Minsk, there were many, many enemies of Chassidut. But despite the fact that there were mostly enemies there, the Rabbanim, the Tamikam were enemies of Chassidut. Despite that, they had enormous respect for the Baal Tanya because he was a great man of learning. He was a tremendous Talmud Chacham, an extraordinary Talmud Chacham. So they had respect for him, they had great respect. And in Minsk, when the Rebbe came, they closed down all the shops, and all the Jews came to greet him. And all the big rabbis welcomed him, they brought him into the shul, and they sat him down on the throne. And all the great rabbis of Minsk came with pages with questions to ask the Rebbe about time. They came with questions to ask about time. Yeah, a man like that, he knows how to learn like that. So these rabbis have been talking, you know, tomorrow learn, have questions over the last 30 years. They have different questions that they couldn't answer. They have a man like this, so they wanted to have answers. And also they were hoping maybe they can get him, you know, that he shouldn't know. So the Rebbe sits down in his chair, and he's looking at all these great rabbis sitting at a table, and the Rebbe's looking at them. And the Rebbe says, I see, gentlemen, that you all brought your papers with you. You have questions for me. And the Rebbe says, fine, I like talking to her, it's good. But first, my Eschassidim would like to sing a little bit before we learn. So first I want to sing my Nigun. The Alter Rebbe has a famous song. It's an amazing song. The song of the four movements. There's a sefer of over 400 pages written explaining the song. There are no words. So Alter Rebbe starts to sing this song, this Nigun. He closes his eyes, he sings this Nigun 15 minutes, a half hour, 40 minutes, almost an hour, he's singing this song. And the Baal Tanya says, okay, honored rabbis, I'm ready now. Please, ask me all the questions that you have. Ask me any of the questions. He goes to the Sotra, please, stop to ask me questions. And all the rabbis are looking at their pages with questions. Not questions. They saw that there weren't questions at all. Everything was easy. The answers were all there. They knew all the answers. It was obvious. They looked at it and said, I didn't know that. and they were very, very nervous. They all looked up to the Rebbe together, and they thought they were under some kind of a spell. You know, he was like a whammy on him. They didn't know what it was. They heard that he had great powers, and they were very afraid, what is this? So the Rebbe smiled, and he said, don't be frightened. I received from my great teacher, the Mizritch HaMagid, that a niggun, a song, has the power to straighten out the crookedness of the heart. And the only reason you didn't understand your learning, and the reason you had questions in life, is because your hearts weren't straight. And I straightened your hearts out of that song. But a niggun, a song, that itself, the word shiraz, the word shura, which means straightening out. That a niggun has the power to straighten out the crookedness of the heart. A song has the power to straighten out, because a song means the straightness of the heart. A song means you have 1,000 questions. Why did God allow 6 million Jews to die in the Holocaust? Yeah? You ask us a question? So what? We still put on soul in the morning. That's a song. But the person who says, I don't know, if God killed 6 million Jews in the war, then maybe I shouldn't be, you know, it's not so good to serve him. Maybe he's not God, he's not just, who knows what? Then you've interrupted the soul. Just the same way the frog says, look, I do what I have to do. I know that I'm going to the lake in 15 minutes, I'm going to get eaten by that fish. That's what I have to do. So be it. And if sometimes Hashem asks us to jump at the fire stream, to go, God forbid, to get famous to him, so we'll do it. And we've done it. That's part of the soul. That's part of the soul. That's the soul. Straight. You do what Hashem wants you to do. How do you know what Hashem wants you to do? You have to know the halacha. Halacha means walking. It means walking in a straight line. That's what else do you know? You don't know anything else. You only know what the Chachamim tell you, what the halacha tells you. That's all we know. That's all we need to know. What's the halacha? What's the halacha? What do I do? Here's the halacha, this is what I do. No coffee, no games. What's the halacha? Yes?
In the beginning you said that when a person is meant to die, whether they're under a table or they love that, so someone wants to commit suicide, is that meeting their destiny? Because you say it's very wrong, so how is it wrong if it's just meeting their destiny?
Killing yourself is wrong. Dying is not wrong, it's unfortunate. Dying is not a sin. Dying is an atonement. But if you kill yourself, it's a sin. It wasn't meant for you to kill yourself.
It happened, obviously. That's what was supposed to happen.
No, what was supposed to happen was that you're supposed to die. That you killed yourself was your choice. And you have to, and that's a terrible sin. That takes away all the pleasure of suicide. The biggest that every person can do is to kill himself. Usually dying is, it brings atonement and kapara. And here a person kills himself and destroys that opportunity for kapara. That's your own choice. How you die is your own choice. Maybe so then you were destined to die, fine. So you could have gotten to Cleveland, God forbid, into a car accident. You could have fallen off a mountain. But that it came in such a way. That's your own business. As we believe. That's your business. That was Dovra Mouth was healing. Like, wow, look at this amazing song that I wrote, this beautiful, beautiful song. And the Prabhu was saying, it's beautiful, you're right, but the most beautiful song is just being a simple, it's very beautiful, but being a simple Jew that follows his line, being a simple person that does what he's supposed to do, that's the most beautiful song. Yeah, but after he finished, he was feeling a little bit like, look how amazing, I'm so different than everybody, right? And the Prabhu was saying, let me. Just, you're doing what God gave you the talent to do. Don't get carried away. God gave you the power to write Tehillim and you did it. It's beautiful. Don't get carried away. You did what you're supposed to do. You're supposed to write Tehillim, you did it. Fine. And I'm supposed to jump into the lake. I'm going to jump into the lake. Don't get carried away. Beautiful. Fine. It's no different than my song. I sing a beautiful song. My song is just as beautiful. More beautiful. No, I don't remember the second. More beautiful. Just as beautiful. I don't know. That's the song. Because Baruch should give us the clarity to be able to see what's right and what's wrong, to be able to know when the truth is staring us in the face, and to be able to live lives without questions, without to realize that every single step of our lives is a gift from Hashem. If you realize that every single step that you take is a gift from Hashem, it makes life easier. It makes life less. You make yourself less meshuggah. You don't spend your whole day worrying, is the boss going to smile at me or be angry at me? You have people that sit their whole lives in some office, and the boss gives you a smile and makes you feel you did something good, then your heart starts to sing. And the boss looks at you like he makes a face, and then you go home and you want to cry. There's no way to live. You do what you have to do. You daven, you put on tefillin, you do mitzvahs, you keep Shabbos, you eat kosher, and that's all. You do the best job you can at work because you're getting paid. You have to do the best job you can. The boss doesn't like it. He doesn't like it. He wants to fire me. He fires me. What are you going to do? Make yourself a sugar? You're going to spend your whole life kissing someone's feet? It's crazy. You don't depend. It's not up to him whether or not you have a livelihood. It's up to Hashem. You do your job the best way you can. He doesn't like it, so okay, he doesn't like it. 10 years from now, you're going to have him as an employee. So what? Hashem would gather together all nasty bosses in one room. Everybody would like that a button, kill nasty boss. It's a Galgal Chozer B'Olam. The world turns around. And one day, he's on top, and the next day, you're on top. You make yourself a sugar. There's no difference whether you're standing at the edge of the Grand Canyon, or you're standing at the edge of the street in Manhattan. There's a God in heaven that determines what's going to be with your life. And the only one that will listen to you, and the only one that can change your life is Hashem. And if we keep that lesson in our minds, life becomes a lot easier, a lot more pleasant. Our davening becomes better. And we'll be zoch, we'll be worthy to see many, many Yeshuot, salvations, and nechamot in our lives. Yes? Are you allowed to daven alone? Without a minyan, you mean? Yes, you're allowed to. It's better to daven in the minyan, shachrit, minchan, arvit, it's better. Sure, you can do the deep without myself. Sure. We call that davening by the kotel. You know what the kotel is? The kotel is in Yerushalayim, the Wailing Wall, the Western Wall. Right? There's an expression, somebody didn't see in shul that day, he said, where do you daven? They say, I daven by the kotel. That means by the wall in your house. It's daven by the kotel. It's not a sin to pray alone. As a matter of fact, since I'm talking to Spider-Man, I'll tell you that Rabbi Tzion Abba Shaul, one of the greatest Rabbi Shaul in the world, Rabbi Tzion Abba Shaul says that if a person wants to daven by himself, he feels like it because he can concentrate more, he's allowed to. He doesn't have to go to a minyan. You don't have to do that in a regular thing. What's time because you want to sleep like that's not what he's talking about. Sometimes you feel you need to daven by yourself. So Rabbi Tzion brings in a different post, you're allowed to. But usually you should daven in a minyan. But you have to do a minyan on stone. You can put on stone if you're not in a minyan. You have to put on stone if you're the last Jew in the world. You're supposed to put on stone, you're supposed to daven. There's no minyan. If you live in a place in the South Pole, you have to put on stone. Yeah, you're supposed to. That's true. Sometimes a person feels more into davening when he's by himself, yeah, than with other people. Still, when a person's davening by himself and Hashem puts the spotlight on him, right, and says, "Okay, let's see what you have to say. Let me hear what." But when he's davening together with the tzibur, with a community of Jewish people, so Hashem doesn't put the spotlight on you. The tefillot are accepted of the community, right? So it's true that in your heart you might feel more kavana, but it's safer to daven in a minyan. And if you want to daven by yourself, fine. You're not the only daven shachrit min ka'arvi. You know you can say tefillin anytime you like, and Hashem listens, fantastic. But shachrit min ka'arvi, you should go to shul, daven in the minyan. It's a powerful thing. It's a very deep and powerful thing to daven in the minyan. Yeah?
So when it's the prayer of the community,
but still,
if there's even 20 minutes together, each man may be
davening
for something else.
So
how is it?
No, I'm talking about shachrit min ka'arvi. No, everybody's saying the same words. What do you mean?
Yeah, but like,
They think, but they're saying the same words. The words have great power. They have great power. Daven together. Huh? What about girls with tefillah b'tzivah? So girls don't have tefillah b'tzivah. So obviously, whatever men accomplish when they daven in a minyan, girls accomplish when they daven themselves. Whatever it is, I'm not sure. But they daven by themselves. There's no such thing as tzibur by women. Each woman is her own problem. Or her own joy. So whatever it happens to be in your life, there's no such thing as tzibur. But you should know that the Jewish women are included in the tefillot of their husbands and their fathers. Therefore, the best thing you can do in Yitzchak Shem for your husbands, or the best thing you can do if you're already married to your husband and your father, tell them, daddy, or tell them your husband, please go to daven with a minyan. Go to daven together in shul with a minyan. It's the best thing. That's also for you. You're included in that. That's why it says in the halacha. But a woman should try to daven. If she's davening, she should try to time her davening the time that they're davening in shul. She's davening. It's better to daven that time than davening in shul. Better. You don't have to, but it's better to coordinate your tefillot with the tefillot of the Beit Knesset that your husband or your father goes to. It's a big thing. To join yourself to the community of Jewish people. It's a big thing. A very, very big thing. I shan't listen to a lot of tefillot for that song. Yeah? Oh, you wanted this in the very beginning. No? I'm sorry. Yes, I'm listening.
That question you asked us already.
No, I don't want to hear the second question. Yeah.
You said that Hashem already decided when he wants to live your life or when he wants to live, right? How do you explain if the person wants to make the passion, not to go to a terrible places or like to go to dangerous areas? How do you explain that?
Because Chazal say that if a person like I said to you before, the, walking by a wall that it looks like it's going to fall, looks like it's going to fall down, is a dangerous thing. Why? Especially during the time of Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur. Why? Because when a person shows an overconfidence in his schuyot, in his merit, like nothing could happen to him. Nothing happened, you know, he's perfectly safe, he's a tzaddik. And Hashem judges you in a stricter way.
Why did he say that Hashem helps those people to help themselves?
That's not a Jewish thing.
No?
That's like charity begins at home.
I always say to my kids, don't go to this place or that place, because you
know,
you help yourself.
You're not wrong. You're not wrong, but that's not... But you have to... Let's take the words carefully. The words mean God helps those who help themselves. If you think about it carefully, that's a little bit of a heresy. There's no such thing as a person that helps himself. Only God helps us. But you have to... But you, what you mean to say to your children is, listen, it's true that Hashem protects you, but you can't be an idiot. You have to do what's right. You have to take care of yourself. That's true. But that expression is not from the... You know, from Chazal. That expression comes from the non-Jews. That's true, because in a place where Shechiche, the Gemara says Shechiche Hazeka, means in a place where there's very often something bad happens, so you have to know that that's a place of din, it's a place of judgment, and you stay away from such a place. There are many more, I mean, to explain this, there are many, many more things. The Ramban says that if a person would be truly merited, if you would really have a lot of merits, if you really believe deeply, you would never have to go to the doctor. You'd never have to go to the doctor. You would never, if you really believe with all of your heart, you'd never have to go to the doctor. But who's on such a level? So the person's sick, they go to the doctor. And you try to believe that Hashem is the one that helps the doctor to do the right thing. But the Ramban says, Ma'al Rofei B'Beit Hashem, what does a doctor have in the house of God? And the Ramban himself is a doctor. The Ramban himself is a doctor. But the Ramban says that medicine is only something we need because we're not holding on such a level where we know that everything's from Hashem. But if you would really know that and you would believe it, you wouldn't need a doctor. You wouldn't need a doctor. Like when the Rebbe Elimelech, I told the kids in school that the Holy Rebbe Elimelech was once sitting by the table, and they used to have these lanterns, you know, kerosene? Nest. The kerosene in the middle. And once the Rebbe Elimelech was sitting by the table, and no one knows why he did it, all of a sudden he takes his hand down and he sticks it into the kerosene lamp, into the fire. And everybody starts to scream and to yell, and they jump there and they grab the Rebbe's hand down, and it's burnt so crisp. The hand is terribly burnt. And all of a sudden the Rebbe Elimelech, everybody's screaming and yelling, they didn't know what happened. And the Rebbe looked at his hand and he says, oh, this is Melech. He used to call himself by his name. He says, Melech's hand is burnt. And he looked at his hand, and then he went like this. And he put it, he took his hand and says, Baruch Hashem, Melech's hand is burnt. Baruch Hashem, Melech's hand is burnt. Because the emunah that Rabbi Elimelech had, that Hashem runs the world, is so clear, is so crystal bright and clear in his eyes, he doesn't have to go for plastic surgery. And that's all the stories that we have in Tzaddikim, that we're able to bring all kinds of report because they believed in it. We believe that Hashem can do everything, but we say, I know Hashem can do it, but the doctor, could you please help? I know Hashem can do it, but... Well, so that, because, and I tell people, I have people, they said, I don't want to go to the doctors, I'm just going to dive and I'm just going to say, come on, don't, you better go to the doctor. Because we're not holding such a level. We're not such a level. That's how you should go to the doctor, thinking that Hashem will help you through the doctor, right? And the great doctor, it's the same thing. It's the same through that doctor. That's why there was a Dr. Valach in Yerushalayim. He started, you heard of the Shaarei Tzedek Hospital?
Yeah.
Dr. Valach was the one that started. So this Dr. Valach, when he was a great doctor, in the early 1900s, he was operating, he had very advanced methods in surgery. All the tzaddikim used to send people to him and go to him. So Dr. Valach, when he used to go into the operating room with a person, he used to be walking in with a Tehillim. He used to stand there before together with the person and say, come, we're going to say Tehillim now. That's how the doctor, before he operated, with the patient would say, let's say Tehillim. That's a doctor. That's a Jewish doctor.
Kosher doctor.
Yeah, not the doctors. The doctors now you see in most, not kosher, but they're still good doctors, kosher doctors. But you see in the most doctors, their faces are telling you,
take blood out.
Telling you, I am the Lord your God. You will now fear me and serve me. You will love me, and most important, you will.